before that, if there was a form for Jesus action. I don't know if anyone remembers that. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to talk about this briefly, and I'll go through that 20 minutes, and then I'm going to ask anyone on the floor here to talk about things that they personally were involved in or memories that they had at the time. So this was just a fragment. But basically, Dr. Jim Kim, who was a member from Richmond, called together a forum called Youth Action. He wanted kids to be involved more in politics. I think he particularly hoped they would join Young Labour. So they gave a forum for teenagers to actually go and have meetings. And when they went to these meetings, they often joined and became their own group. So one became secondary students for Democratic Action, they were students for the Sense, which was an underground new faith movement spread over maybe. They claimed 21 schools. So generally, all these schools are pretty isolated. But there was a strong connection with St Kilda because, first of all, several of the people involved in Melbourne High were from Hashanah Sahir, which was just a sign of socialist movement about 10 minutes walk from here. And also, the Monash Labour Club owned a property in Shirley Grove, which was used to print. So we used to go and print, and they would be printed on gazetteners. Mm-hmm. Anyone know what a gazetteners was?
Yeah.
So what do you remember about gazetteners? What is a gazetteners?
It's a machine, and you tie into wax paper, and there's wax, and it would cut through the wax, and it goes on a round thing, and you turn it round, and the ink would go through where you type with a typewriter, and cut through the wax, and you'd use methylated spirits would somehow go through with the wax. We would do ink in order to print on the paper. It was much more complicated than the photocopy.
Mainly, like you said, a photocopy, you typed onto the thing on your typewriter, and you put it on the rollers, and you actually hand printed it off. And when you finish, your hands were black and pink. And so it was like the Gutenberg press. You really did print.
Mm.
You know, you turn the thing, and you printed, each sheet by hand.
Mm.
Yeah,
and you tie from the methylated spirits.
So the press was rolled,
The press was
still rolled, you know.
Because Fitner was a brand, was a company that actually manufactured these machines. Yeah.
But anyway, when I was expelled from school, we were distributing underground papers. So these are the single sheet, and they'd be distributed in the school. And then, usually in opposition, so if there was a tent and all the dental underground, it's called Ubiquity Underground, or Folklore Underground. But when during this expulsion, of course, it wasn't that this actually became quite common, like professional students, because 2 years later was the moratorium, and a lot of students marched, and a lot of schools threatened their students for expulsion if they marched. But this was the first time, so it was sort of a revelation that secondary students were involved in the same activities, and also that they were in touch with university students and with political leaders like Tim Kent, so actually were actively liaising. So, you know, here's the Monash Labour Club, you know, very pleased that, you know, it's got into the press. There are students also writing, the members of secondary students for Democratic Action, protest against the transgression of human rights. And also a letter from the headmaster claiming that, you know, the students are terrorists and they've been letting off bombs in the school. But they've got the stink bombs. And, you know, they're always letting off stink bombs in that time. That was just a complete But anyway, that caused a lot of problems for the headmaster, as we'll see. Go. Next slide. This is an article from Rupert E. Thompson. Principal, and claiming the type of person who would be involved in this is hydrophanic acid gas, extremely dangerous to human life, a form of hydrogen sulfide, etc. But unfortunately, that rebounded because one of the teachers protesting the design of the high claims that the headmaster had clearly admitted to all the staff that that was a complete lie, and knew very well. So, then my mother, who my Jewish mother, as you see, asked for an interview, but she went to see him, because in the Jewish mother, she, like it said, he first took to her bed, then she refused to speak to me for 3 weeks. And then she went to the headmaster and said she was just a poor Jewish refugee and, you know, she needed her son back at school. So he agreed I could go back if I passed my exam. But that was very unlikely because in Melbourne High they teach you all the exam papers and of course I was home. So they actually feed all the students. They don't give them exact exams, they give them previous years, but they give them a pretty good idea of by feeding the exams so that everyone passes and keeps the reputation of Melbourne High. So, so what was interesting was like, it was obviously a fairly conservative country, but many, many, many people wrote in protesting, and particularly even teachers wrote in protesting about that the idea that students in secondary school shouldn't have the right to have a political say in things. So, so, you know, like my brother always said that one of the major problems we've ever had in life is that no one ever spells our name right. To get our name in the paper was great. And they used to talk about Ivers and Tate, and for years my friends all referred to me as Tate. Is that right, Mark?
Yeah.
Still sometimes. And even when I was at home, I was completely mystified, so none of these people ever contacted me. I just asked them. 17. And I was very traumatised because, of course, I was very relatively innocent in some ways, and I just thought, like, if you're kicked out of school, your life was over. And then I thought, like, oh, there's an old school mate, you go to school, or, you know, I never thought there was any else. I've been trained from day one, you go to Melbourne High, and that's it. And, of course, all the students here, we went to Melbourne High to speak recently, and David Singer, another former troublemaker, and he asked the kids in the room to put up their hands if their parents had ever been to university. And about 90% of them did. And he said, when we were at school, virtually none of our parents had ever been to university. So, like, our parents were from Ukrainian villages and fleets and whatever. So, you know, like, this was a generation, like, if you wanted to get ahead and you didn't get into uni, you'd be a disaster because the expectation of your parents was absolutely university. And it was quite a competition to get there. Mm. Yeah. Oh, and this is interesting, that Robert Garvey, my English teacher, resigned in protest, saying that he got, I think he said that, he said, here we have the spectacle of a tired, old, forgotten man pitted against the young idealist. And Gary used to teach a subject, a book called The Wind of Voice. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah.
It was always fanatical about it. It was about a boy at the turn of the century England who'd been kicked out of school unjustly. He was pretty upset, and he was convinced I was the Wind of meanwhile, in response, two teachers at Melbourne High, they called them masters. And, you know, generally they wear these black gowns and their hats. And it was all like Ethan, you know, they were always trying to pretend they were private school. So they obviously took the opposite point of view. Yep. Here we have, you know, two articles for the paper. Go for it, actually, because it's the same thing. So here is teachers, so 48 teachers signed a petition saying that the school system was restricting the well-being education for independent thinking individuals. So that was interesting, that teachers themselves thought that the system was inadequate, and at those days you had 36 kids in a class. So like the challenge of teaching kids weren't that easy. You have to be truly famous to get poison hemorrhage. This is what happened. I had actually letters in the mail.
Really?
Both for and against. When I said I would escape, they played on the word go. It says you poor, undereducated, baby. Why are you so silly? You let other people pull your leg, you have no. Be a gentleman for a change, you poor goat. You can see the intellectual talent. So that's a treasured thing I have, you know, that poison. And I didn't look. Unfortunately, I've never got another one.
Is that why you changed your name from Michael to Matt?
This is my favourite, because like your 17-year-old contestant kept her unloaded toy, and then you see a demonstration of his square saying, "You might see the favourite third Michael, I love mine." You've never ever seen it, and there's actually a girl there doing that. Of course, in those days, girls are hardly recognised because they had hats, gloves, blazers, ties, and they used to come to Melbourne High, and it was pretty hard to see anything of a shape. Just come to High for the uniform. So, that was a student demonstration in the city square, which described as a flop because only 50 people turned up. But it's still amazing that 50 students would leave school during school hours and go to the city square. So then it actually elevated into a political thing because obviously the Minister for Education, Mr. Thompson, who died recently, backed up the principal of the tree. Next. And so the Minister for the Opposition, Clive Holding, got stuck into the Minister for Education, saying he failed to act with any degree of competence. So he went into basically the Parliament in terms of the debate. And the reason it went to Parliament was because Jim Keynes was involved, the Labor Deputy Prime Minister. You can see why.
So you in Hansard somewhere?
Absolutely. Because it got to such a level that one of the members of Parliament was thrown out of the Parliament for calling Dixon a coward and a liar. And Dixon was the Minister for St Kilda.
Brian
Dixon. A former footballer.
Yeah.
So that's another amazing thing. If you're at home and you see parliamentarians being thrown out of the house, as is the Idleton case. No one had ever rang me or spoke to me or whatever. But, somehow they decided to take up my cause and so forth. And although it's not clear here, what happened was originally they attacked Keynes, but Keynes, having formed youth action, he was accused of being the patron and creator of the Student Underground. To which Keynes said, "Well, I'm not the patron of the Student Underground, but if I was, I'd be very happy to be, That's a flattering remark. But Keynes didn't resolve one second, one inch. But because he was being attacked, and the Labor Party, of course, went on the offensive as well. That's another thing, many people spend in the debate. In a series of uproarious clashes, the opposition leader called the Assistant Minister for Education, Mr. Rochester, a liar, but withdrew the remark. erupted across a bowl of four-letter words from an underground newspaper. At the time, about 35 girl leading students from the school in his electorate were sitting in the gallery, and they heard that word for the first time. Oh, yeah, here's another one. Mr. Rossman said that Dr. Cairns, the federal labor minister for Yarra, had fired the first shots of World War III. There's no exaggeration. So, Cairns obviously was a very prominent member of the Labor Party. I think he's a deputy and Labor deputy prime minister. So, by attacking Cairns, of course, they were threatening the Labor Party in Australia as a whole. It turns out that Cairns was formerly Mr. Consulate, not the principal, but the minister's teacher. So that led to quite a few, you know, articles on that comment.
Was he a suit at the time for his girlfriend as well?
That came later when he was actually the minister for economics or something like that. And he hired Jim Morrison to be their office manager. And he called him to stick in the mud. That was that cause of GTA for how could he use such strong language? Stagger the man and Dr. Cairns' mission to encourage students to take over school from their teachers. There's an article deploring the behaviour of both parties. And this time I think people are getting a really bit of sick of the debate, we're in about the second or third week. I was in the cartoonist got involved, and one thing was that because of two young men, wasn't a joke actually, but at the time it had an element of rebel humour, that the leader of all the student undergrounds was Fabian Wilmore. He didn't exist, that was a legendary figure that we made up. So Fabian Wilmore quoted this, Fabian Wilmore quoted that. And he was always in 10 places at once. And then there was Felicity Wilmore. She was another female version, because there were quite a few girls, sort of like New Time of Girls Time. One of her friends, Linda Mellon, was editing Fallout. One of the four, which is one of the undergrounds. So that's the reference that Wilmore is.
Yeah,
that's only because
they need an underground.
Yes. I was a juvenile VS Com. They were fly form. And his wig, this really means to use a ticket as a trigger and restricting the individual freedom, which is more another week. Classic. Week is still alive, by the way.
Yeah.
Just trying to get him to come next year.
Oh, yeah.
And this is a very common theme that we see and there was a lot in the papers that compared activities by high school to kindergarten. Mm. Like, what a ridiculous idea it is to expect students, a high school student, to have political opinion. It's impossible. So, away with city pace, more potties for 3 years old. Citizens of the city, fairy tales are bunk, paint the teacher now. So, a block on this topic. And here's Hannah. So, there's me in the middle. And students are just purely manipulated by secondary schools, by other agencies, by older people. Similarly again, king of power. I think that some of the underground newspapers, most of the journalists though who actually wrote columns were very sympathetic because they obviously recognised fellow journalists and student youth movements that they were writing papers and some of the journalists started working with cadets themselves for local papers. So they were generally very sympathetic to that. And pointed out that obviously these newspapers didn't really, the government was unlikely to fall and World War III was unlikely to commence because of the papers. So a lot of these underground papers, there's about 12 different regions are up on that wall. Joe and it's kind of worth it. So if you want to have a look at them, there are. And they're also there's copies here as well. So actually I'll pass those around and have a look at those. Next, Charmian Smith, a very famous writer and journalist, and also very sympathetic, and she even this summer we spoke of underground trees and sent them underground Pravda, tea on underground high rise and so forth. So it's amazing to have so many pages because, you know, most of the students probably never met each other. You know, they'd be bumped into each other at Shirley Grove. They didn't all publish out of Shirley Grove either, but if you did, if you went there, you'd often find copies of these other papers because there are collected together other papers as well. Because I'll go back in this says on that idea, you wicked, wicked children, your business is to be meek and obedient, to start on Monday morning, that you love God and your country and honor your flag. Please bring your flag and Jesus quite often takes decisions and figures and facts to address the past examination and believe that protecting questions of human rights, social change, civil obedience, etc., 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 from others. These are articles from Age Editorial and the Herald, obviously. I was pushing the view that it's, you know, what the hell was it all about anyway? It's gone too far. And, you know, people should pull their head in. So, similar idea. And then, what happened was that people offered to tutor me. Like Harry Van Morse, who actually never turned up and never rang me to complain to actually there was one teacher from Stocks College. He did shoot me. So I'd go all the way up the end of the Hundred Road to Stocks College. And he hardly ever said a word. I just sat in his office and he went through exam papers after exam papers. He'd work out the problems in front of me. He never told me how to do anything. He just said, he realised there wasn't enough time. So he just said, okay, section one, physics. This is how you work it out. Section two, this is how you work it out. And I wasn't a particularly good student. I would never have passed all those subjects. But because I've been thrown out of school and got tutoring, I actually did better than I would have done if I had passed everything. It was a miracle. Well, what happened was that the school had sent me indirectly messages that, you know, if they agree with my work, you go to school, but if obviously I was going to be ranting around the press and just complaining on the high, that wasn't going to happen. So I wasn't allowed to comment. In fact, in one case, there was a film crew came to my house and filmed me, and my mother then came home and found out that Quinn Showman was in the news. So she rang in at 6:25. And they said they couldn't stop it, and she said, well, you can speak to my lawyer and hung up. And they showed it. So I had to, like, in one case I was on the radio, but I had to give interviews under another alias to pretend I was someone else. Not that that really caused the score. But in the end, Thompson agreed to take me back. Well, he had to, because I can't do anything. They would. And also, the school had been mauled as well. There's more than one way. It wasn't obvious being to come back to school, they've got a, you know, his reputation had also been checked, so it was kind of a win-win situation by being back and was there. Although that was probably a mistake because it would have got more free tutoring if I stayed out. So it was very, it was like the last day because they refused to tell me I'd pass. I'd bring in conference, they'd bring in some weeks, they refused to tell me what would happen. Virtually the last day of school when I had to reluctantly pass everything. So I spent the last year back at school. So as I say, it's obviously just one tiny viewpoint out of the protest movement, but it's still, when you read all the articles about this tremendous debate about, you know, what is the purpose of education, what are the rights of students, you know, what are the rights of students to be involved in this situation, it's still a quite an interesting question. It's quite a fascinating debate even these days. Although, of course, probably in most schools, it was just that Melbourne High was so conservative and had such an inferiority complex about not being a private school, which you're always aiming to, that they decided to react because it wasn't going to happen in their school. But probably if they'd just forgotten about it, and left it, it would have died out, you know, quite naturally. It's in South Yarra, on top of a hill, it's like a castle.
Right.
And I went back to David Dimmer about 3 weeks ago to show them this presentation for the students.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I said in the little book that we prepared, so I was in there and David Smith, the assistant principal, was running around making a cup of tea and printing the copies because I'm putting in a frame to hang on the wall.
Yeah.
So I actually printed off a copy. I think Dorothy's got it. I'll send the lady around. You can keep those out now if you like. But yeah, it was good to see the press was rolling again.
It's not a private school now.
No, it's still a state school, and it looks a lot smaller than when I was there. And most of the students are from an Asian background now, whereas half the school was Jewish. But the students, it was very
relaxed.
I
wonder
where
you have to have an entrance exam
here then,
or
yeah.
Is it just anyone
can go? Yeah. It was what was called a feeder school. You went from sometimes a central school, but you know, they took the top third students from different schools and then others from the zone. But it's become more select
now
because of the demand. But the students were fantastic, they were really going and walking around the school and they haven't actually in the hall downstairs renovated the theatre. Exactly like it was 40 years ago. It hasn't changed, you know, in one iota. And I was singing school songs, Lives in Our Hearts and Trees Our Fantasy.
And that is the boys' school. There's a Melbourne High for girls, though.
Yes, McGraw Girls, yes.
But it's a reference to the Melbourne High for girls. Yeah.
No, that's a new school, a relatively new school, 10 years old. The sister school was McRobertson.
Oh, that was your sister school. Oh, I didn't
know. So these are the two elite state schools, the Melbourne and the University.
Right.
There
was McRobertson.
Well, I'm not sure about that. Maybe some people here could remember that, but I don't recall any specifically person from McGraw. There was another girl in Edinburgh who was in Hushing Out the Hill. She was a new tiny girl. Yeah, so it's a very patchwork, but as you know, there are hundreds of high schools. And so, for example, Prabhupada, I think, is not even Tunisia. And another one is Dutton. But sometimes it was middle class, upper middle class. There's other times it was working schools with other students who, you know, have probably much bigger problems or issues. But all these students, you know, in past management today, they're all fronting the possibility of being sent off to fight in the jungle of Southeast Asia a year after they graduated from school. So once you're in matriculation, or it was head down because, you know, like, it was ferociously competitive. So, and as I was saying, most of the children of migrants, very high expectations. So in a way, in leaving was probably the only year you had the luxury of actually agitating because
I just wondered if there's something going on before the halls of this at Melbourne High, because I started there in the 80s. I can remember almost our first week, we were handed this 8-page Romeo booklet, the rules and regulations for FOIA at Melbourne High School, which I still have. It's the most extraordinary authoritarian document, which goes on about how the school is not a democracy, all those things about shoelaces, all that stuff, Martin said. Because obviously they were fearful of something, and I wondered, so you started 2 years earlier, was there anything going on at the school before then that you're aware of, that they felt the need to produce something like that. Plus we've got this beach had a rinse of going Community Aid Australia and had to join the army,
what's it called, the
you still follow the rules of this booklet? All this stuff, as you know, we've been bobbing our heads and it's all there. We were terrorised that first few weeks. I mean, it was a very authoritarian kind of regime. The schools obviously were busy to scare the shit out of us.
One of my first memories is they lined all these machine guns up on the stage, the students there, and then suggested we join the the post-war period, they were still all operating on the mentality of the war. Hierarchical, reflective war thing they had generated to see affluent young people. I mean, you might remember, like, the generation of all the kind of youth culture, counterculture around the world, that was seeing that youth around the world were completely different than the older generation, and all democracy was under threat. And I think the 36 kids in the class, school like Bill and I, just thought the only way to respond to this is to get to this kind of misdemeanor and harder and harder and harder. Because at the slightest thing, the Melbourne High School kids would jack up. Because they, under this repressive regime, they thought it was legitimate. So there were tons of locker fights in there. And they used to throw bags of water from the second floor.
Oh my God!
And then go down and hit people, you know? And,
that wasn't your school.
Yeah, it was quite a... I'm not sure why that was so, you know, thingy, but,
no girls.
I think you're partly right that they were trying to ape a private school.
Yeah.
The
private school students have to grow up in that way.
Yeah.
And if they were taken around the state school because they didn't have that form of discipline, it's something
you can't do.
Yeah.
I think it was just the whole philosophy, which is completely, you know, like, there's a lot more things about child-centered schools these days.
Mm.
But that was sort of caught between, you know, the era when we went to school where it was like, you know, beating kids was fine and all this was fine and the stress was fine. And it was that era of like 50, 60 kids a class in high school, 30, 40. And this mentality, and I mean, up to about the 1980s, it was still like, if we get rid of the strap or the cane, it'll just be chaos. And, of course, you know, these days, you don't read. Well, anyway, it didn't turn out that way. So I'm not sure why that's Jeff. You want to... Actually, Jeff Rubenstein was probably the main...
I'm a contemporary Mr. Anderson.
Yeah,
I just wanted to point out to the audience that none of the teachers at the school actually looked like that. I shouldn't take the point of view from the cartoon, because that is actually representative of what the teachers are like.
That clears up a lot of
misunderstandings. Unfortunately, people do see stuff like that, and they think it's representative. They think because it's written down, that there's some facts behind it.
So what Jeff and I do, we go up to the classroom, and one kid would guard one end of the corridor and one the other, and then we'd walk in and just leave sheets of newspapers on a desk and put a sign saying, distribute. So we just trusted that any student who would walk into that room would automatically pick them up and distribute them to people. Because there's that undercurrent of the school so strong about, you know, like a time of war between staff and kids. I mean, it was a school where you thrived well if you were in, if you intellectually you were in the top third, and
the other sister goes back to the
other.
Yeah, you kind of refer to, you're always referring to your second name.
Does anybody else remember or have particular experience with anyone else in the underground? Yes.
So. Yes.
I was the owner of the house of Shirley Grove, also of the notorious Gassetna. And the Gassetna, or the duplicating machine, was a very critical instrument at the time. We had a slogan at the time, adapted from Mao Zedong, we said, power grows out of the barrel of a Gassetna. because it was the cheap and easy and almost instant means of communication, because the typewriter, a packet of stencils, and one of these hand-operated duplicating machines. Of course, the other brand was the radio.
Yeah.
And I first began to hear of the radio.
Much easier than the cassette.
No, much the same principle. But I think the radio was an American machine and the cassette was a German. But the radio was used by Pat Mackey in the Mount Isa strike, because in the Mount Isa strike, 1964, the then Queensland government banned, made ownership of a printing press illegal. They had to license them. It was illegal for more than three people to meet together. Mackey would bring out his underground newspaper, which was printed on the radio machine, which they would often smuggle through the police lines by taking it to Vic and hiding it in the spare tyre of a car, then reassembling it on the other side of the car. Like the underground during the war, almost. And I remember Don Henderson wrote a song about Mackey and his machine, and the chorus of which was, "Work while out there, radio."
How did you, the owner of the house, and the radio, and what was your
life? I was an agency journalist, but also a student at Monash, so I was a little bit older than the others, so I was buying this little house, a little single floated house in St Kilda, of course, the use of those sort of view sheets, you know, had spread up. I'd originally been at Sydney University, where I'd run a new sheet called Wednesday Commentary, or also known as WC. when I came to Monash, we started print. That started off as a weekly, but before long it became a daily. And that was a very... And the administration, you know, couldn't cope with this. Students putting out a daily newspaper, admittedly, you know, a foolscap, double-sided foolscap sheet size. But it meant that, so we had a different editor for each night. One of the people who was one of the print editors is now a very well-known age journalist, Russell Skelton. And of course, newspapers like that happened in every... Well, most universities in space, so they spread around. The origins of Fabian and Felicity Wilmore actually go back to the Army. In my misguided youth, been a member of the Army Reserve, where I'd been in a signals regiment. And one of the things we learned in when you were broadcasting over the air on a radio, you never referred to the commander by their rank, because that would give an idea to the enemy listening in, you know, what size of a force you might be. So in Army voice procedure, the leader of any unit was always known as Sunray. Now, Sunray could be a lance corporal or a field marshal. All anyone listening would know that Sunray was the person in charge. So in a lot of these organisations, we developed a system where we'd all have the one name. So whoever you were around Australia, if you're a bloke, you were Tony Brooks, and if you're a woman, you're Alice Redwick. Kid, of course, students in the sense, picked this up with the invention of the Wilmores.
Yeah.
And I think it was Jeff Gold from Uni High who originally came up with that name, Fabian Wilmore.
Yeah. But Jeff Gold was pretty much Fabian Wilmore, yeah.
I saw Jeff the other day. He's been living in Indonesia for the last 20 years. But he was back briefly.
Yeah, tell him it's all over. He can come back. Well, more free at the start.
Anybody else? I was critic on Diocese's place in the bakery in Grange. And so I was a little bit hard. So for that three issues there, I was double-crossed by a teacher who, in hindsight, I could see was doing some very bad things. But so I was actually threatened with expulsion that they didn't carry it out, which I would have been an advantage for me because I could have studied for the swap back. And I can still remember sitting in the... Because when you're young, you don't understand the relationship between the things that you do and the way that they look at it. It's sort of a surprise when they take it seriously. And I can still remember which I bought a copy, the headmaster waving around in front of the school assembly saying, isn't this terrible? I think, yeah, that's what I did. And, yeah, it was quite an inspiration. And we had all those issues with the Gestapo.
What was it called?
The Manifesto. To me, it was quite, because I came from a political background, but there was a lot of other, it's just what other children called out of the woodwork to use a phrase, or other kids rather, to help me, you know, and people drew up the bank that made the artwork for it, or scratched in the lamps on the stencil and that sort of stuff. And we tried to publicise issues in the school, which was Elwood High considered itself the younger sibling of Melbourne High and sort of hierarchy for sense.
I thought it was Brighton High.
Well, maybe you're right, but we had the seahorse. Melbourne High had a
unicorn
thing there, and we had the seahorse. So. We had Brian Dixon was our patron saint. it was good education for me, and learned about who was your friends and who wasn't. And I kept that interest, although I didn't really go into journalism in it as such, but I kept that interest in sort of graphics and layout and things like that.
I'm sure these days if you were publishing an underground newspaper legally in the school, you'd be getting extra credit. Somebody to actually write an English essay without being forced to do it.
I'm not being surprised.
Now, Michael, in your lecture, you mentioned about how you had support from Monash University. In your endeavours, did you ever come across Albert Langer?
I think the Monash Labour Club.
Yeah.
Were they involved in the house?
Oh, yes, yeah. And Albert would have been there a lot. And he went to Melbourne High too, of course.
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't have any direct involvement with the Monash Labour Club at all, except that we used their articles quite a bit. And obviously, you know, I made this. And also, we must have met them or mixed with them in some way, like university students at the house. So we were certainly influenced by them, but we had absolutely nothing to do with them on a, you know, person-to-person level.
Now, why? At the time, I was involved with the Worker Student Alliance. I was on the union side, and I often came across him. And it was those meetings we had which led up in 1969, a year later, which was the beginning of the formation of the moratorium movement with Jim Cairns. That's why I'm curious. I could have even come across people like yours truly in that in the late 60s and that.
Well, I think definitely, like, the style of the student underground was very closely Monash, influenced by Monash Labour Club. Because Monash Labour Club were ratbags. And seen by society as ratbags, and were always doing ratbag things. And so certainly the student movement, in that sense, said, yeah, like, we're going to do, like, just calling yourself Prusser or the Manifesto, or, you know, clearly inflammatory. And a lot of the material is clearly inflammatory, and it's deliberately inflammatory, because what it's trying to do is jolt the students, the so-called apathetic students, out of their, you know, just mindless acceptance of what's going on. So this is very provocative, and that style of the Monash Labour Club is a big you know, influence, like the idea that that's in what they did. We can also do something. And also, of course, the protest movement in America, like, you know, everyone else is trying to do something against the war and against civil rights. People are being, civil rights workers are being murdered. You know, everyone's trying. We should pull our fingers out and let's kind of compete or get on board with them. And that was kind of the inspiration for the operation. Like, we didn't want to be left out, you know what I mean? Like, why do you see universities? Why do you see workers protesting? Why don't you see secondary students protesting, you know? We should also have a voice. And we should also get somebody's attention.
One of the most outrageous of those students was Julian Shaw, who came down from Black Rock, and his ship was treason. And he ran this absolutely amazing campaign against pretext. Again, it was a state school that wanted to be a bit like a private school, and the headmaster wanted to introduce pretext, and the students were against it. And in the end, to sort of mollify them, he said, oh, all right, you know, we're going to have the prefects, but you can elect them. Well, treason still opposed them, on the very good grounds that this isn't democracy, because although we're electing the prefects, it's still the teacher's rules they've got to enforce. So what's the point of electing it if you can't make the rules? You know, if you let us make the school rules, fine. And in the end, the school was just unable to make the prefect system work because the students essentially saw through the bogus nature of it.
But when I went to Melbourne High and had tea with the headmaster, the prefects were there, because they don't call them prefects, they're on school captains and whatever. And they were really a pain to say, you know, like, just because we're captains doesn't mean that we just support everything the school does, you know? And I said, listen, just because I've come here 40 years later doesn't mean I think Melbourne High is, I'm transferring, you know? And like, everyone was trying to reassure each other. But, I mean, the students were quite outspoken in assembly as well. They obviously felt quite comfortable in the school. So, somebody, yeah, sorry. Yeah. Mr. Gurry, that's a good question. Because as I was saying, as a student, like, all these people who are involved in politics, nobody ever contacted me. So, like, they acted on their own. And so I never had any contact with Mr. Gurry, but maybe you've got a wrong view of the scene, Mr. Gurry.
Yeah, I saw him about a year after he resigned. He was walking around the Botanical Gardens and his hair was very long at the back. He was almost wild. And of course, he was our hero because he wrote that letter. And obviously, you've mentioned the letter.
Yes.
But the letter specifically, if you think of it, do you have a copy of it?
Yeah. Well,
he said, this is a dispute between an old man and an idealistic young student. And he said, Michael Iverson is the most well-behaved student that's ever been my privilege to teach. He had another problem because I was the most cheeky and unruly and pain in the proverbial student that he ever had. So he let that go. And there was really a fantastic illustration of how a lot of teachers supported the student, but they were terrified of standing up against the administration.
I even remember who I was, so, yeah.
The other thing is, one of the things that was mentioned in the student in Central Underground, was that the next time the teacher tells you to have a haircut, ask him why.
Yeah.
That was a shocking challenge to the student, and it devastated the teachers, that anybody would ask why. But there was a cartoon at the same time by Wedge in the Herald. And it showed Socrates, his long hair and his beard, because he wasn't allowed to grow beard, being kicked down the stairs at the front of the school by the headmaster. Saying, go back when you've had a haircut and a shave. Go back when you've had a haircut and a shave. That was Socrates. So there was a sense of humour about the whole thing as well.
Yes, there are a lot of great cartoons. Roger.
Have you ever used Freedom of Information
no.
to get your ACO file?
No, I haven't. Well, David Zinger mentioned that one of my friends, he, you know, came to Melbourne High with me, because he's an old boy, he organised the event. He said he got his AGO file, and he was so, and he got a copy of it, and he was so disappointed there wasn't more in it. He's been working all his life to get into the AGO file. It should be this thick. So he's registering a complaint.
If people do want to be paranoid, they should try and get the Department of Community Services file. They're much better. The new secret police for today.
I'll tell you.
Community Services. So now you know where to look.
Mayor, what happened to the movement in 69, I think? Cause, I mean, one of the interesting things is obviously it was a start of things like a moratorium.
Yeah.
And it's like these sort of international things, because there was a lot of feeling of mistrust of people, mistrust of authority, and mistrust of government, especially Nixon and all those sorts of things. Did the actual movement itself keep going?
Well, that's one reason I called this anniversary, because I've only got one tiny corner of what was large.
Yeah.
But certainly other people have approached me since and said, oh, you know, like down in wherever I was, or down in Camberwell or whatever, we had this issue, I was thrown out of school. And so obviously, it was like 21 independent campaigns going on. But then also, I think the moratorium, of course, gave people a huge common voice to act. So people as a whole, the protest movement, gathered power rather than individual groups like most labor clubs. You know, 100,000 people could march in the streets. And also the anti-draft movement became huge as well. So I guess there are other avenues. So that's, maybe there are people here today who are involved in other papers who...
There was another sentence that for me captures what happened then. You see Larry Stillman is sitting here, Larry, and then we had a school that was called Tacoma.
Yeah. I've got a whole lot of photos of negatives, which if anyone, I'm going to send them to Melbourne High, because about 100 photos taken in 1969 at Tacoma.
Yeah, we were at Tacoma, and Larry Stillman was there, and Larry was reading in those days, and he was the only guy who ever read anything. And Tomo, the famous principal, showed up at Tacoma. And he said, you can ask me anything.
That's the Melbourne High School Forestry School.
Today it's only 40 minutes from Melbourne, but then it was in the foreign legion in the Sahara. Mm. And Larry said to Tom, you see things the way you do, but in our opinion, you're looking through life, do you remember what he said?
No.
Through a rear vision mirror, he said. And nobody ever saw, and he went completely above his head, and he completely misunderstood the question. I mean, looking through life through a rear vision mirror.
I have no memory of saying that, but the sun did come up, and they ran a double page of photos, which I've got, of Tacoma. And actually, Melbourne High, after Tomo left, or the 2 or 3 or 4 years after, the school actually did go through a change. It was particularly reflected through the school magazine at the end of the year. It was quite a radical, in fact. And I don't know what happened after that, because I left the school. But I suspect a lot of the staff were actually pretty much caught, because they were in the 30s and 40s, and they were seeing this change going on, and he dissolved fast to run the school. So
yeah,
I think
very
reflective of the times, yeah.
But their younger brother, became the editor of
Sentinel, right. I also think it's got a lot to do with Melbourne, Sydney, Adelaide, and the rest, because Australia was much bigger then, in a sense, because all you had was phone calls, who made phone calls, and mail. Who knew anything happening? In fact, I've got this book out of the library here, which is basically about Sydney. And what was going on there in the 60s and the 70s. But I don't know if anyone's done an oral history or anything like that of what happened in Melbourne, and it should be done, because everyone has done, well, many have passed on.
Yeah.
You know, I had a lot of stuff that actually just things I had in a box which I donated to the library.
Why were the negatives
of Tacoma
in the paper? What was
the issue? Oh, no, sorry. I took a lot of photos, which I've just got, which I should send to the schools just pop up. But I think that the Sun had this double page feature just about Melbourne High and kids. I should open up and actually read it again. So obviously something happened that they were aware that there was something going on in the air.
Yeah. And they also said they could get.
No,
they're not Melbourne High,
so
they
yeah.
Still
have
them very small,
but...
And
they
were...
Roy Irvine. Yeah, Roy Irvine. And then Roy was taught art at other schools, came to Melbourne High for about 3 years.
And then when I
had a whole lot of those smoking hippies at the back of the art, which I wish I'd joined earlier. But, you know, things really happened, and then he left and went to Uni High, and then he got involved in other schools. So things really happened at the school, you know, very, very fast and reflective.
I think he was involved in setting up ARDOC.
Could have been.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't
know. Yeah, I think there was enormous change going on, you know, and this was in the media simply because it was a kind of an impact here, but I think there was huge change going on in society generally. And all of that, I mean, a lot of those things that were established then, the institutionalisation, the counterculture, alternative medicine, alternative religions, all these things, equal opportunity, are pretty much kind of a matter of fact that, yeah, but a lot of those generated, you know, after the war in the 60s and 70s. The feminist movement re-emerged, I mean, obviously it's been going to the turn of the century, but, you know, it certainly was the new feminism. Before the domes, do you remember the domes? And the hippie back to the land movement with humans and all that. So there were all this experimentation going on in many different ways. There was even a new Jesus movement, hippie Jesus movement. So, and of course, marijuana. So, sorry, yes? Did you want to say something?
A couple of points on the context. Yeah. Out of category of the era. That made the papers be suspended or kicked out a couple of student teachers because they had beers.
That's right.
And the moment he left, all the teachers were Browning and others. Another thing, there was a Sri Lankan, Sivanese in those days, teacher at the school. Lovely man, good teacher at the junior level. Thompson passed him on the stairs and said, "I don't think foreigners should teach Australian children." And kept going. He then tried to train Thompson's brother, Robert, who was headmaster of the Hepburn College, and Thompson tried to get this teacher transferred there so he could be persecuted by another member of the family. He transferred to the area where he lived. But, you know, he was there 4 years and did a good job. But that was, you know, even at that time, you didn't say those things.
Yes.
But there was nothing wrong, and the teacher after motion of support for the staff after motion of support for that teacher.
Which is saying he really was a prick. Wasn't just my imagination.
He got the job because the previous principal died after 1 year, so he would, under in the normal course of affairs, he would never have gone to obviously.
Communism. They're paranoid about intellectual artists. I first went to work for La Trobe University in 1980, and there was still a policy then that if you were appointed to a position at La Trobe, you were quizzed very closely about your ideas about Marx and communism.
They didn't get a suspender out. It was a new university.
And so they appointed a lot of army people to administration positions. And the assistant registrar at that time was a
was the full-blown serving colonel in the Australian Army. And as a new employee, if you were a good boy, you were taken to lunch with the officers' mess at Broadmeadows Army.
That's true.
Yeah, better dead than red.
Not as a question about, or comment on, get a haircut. This was the army mentality. Persisting.
I went to girls' private school, we had to have hair colour left or tie back into that.
Mm.
And we were told to go to that. Is that how that's right?
Yeah.
It wasn't just the boys.
No.
It was school regulations.
Yeah, and of course the army philosophy is that, you know, it's not just about conforming, it's also about intimidation. So, you know, you're forced to
very much so.
Yeah.
There was that terrible row at the club when the academic board seriously discussed making the university a peace institute, which they voted for, and the first thing they barred from the campus was any attempt by the armed, the Australian Armed Forces to recruit on the campus. And there was that terrible row.
Yeah.
And the staff suffered divided. Fascists
don't know. All the Reds don't know. Well, that's right. In Australia, then there was actually in Australia, there was the capitalist and the working class, and the two weren't reconciled, you know. And there was a class enemy within Australian society. But now it's all outsourced to the third world, you know. But so there was that very strong sense of oppression, and I guess you know Australia sent you know the Boer War, Vietnam War, you know the Korean War. I mean, and, you know, like, how many times were Australians going to be sent thousands of miles across the world to kill communists or whatever, just simply to keep their friends happy? And this is like this old mentality all over again. Not like Iraq and Afghanistan, of course, but, you know,
I know it's late, but also at Melbourne High, at least by 69, there were veterans attending. I remember a number of them, and that certainly a number of us who were aware of them and had big arguments with them.
Mm. But are veterans as teachers or?
No, as students who'd been in Vietnam and then were coming back to being
that's right.
Older students.
Oh, okay.
And they had to comply like everyone else. They had to
that's
head
right.
On, shades and they had to do
and they've been in active combat. You know, I remember one guy had all these false teeth because he'd been shot in the face or something.
Yeah.
Did you mention about the fact that Tomo linked your expulsion or suspension with hydrogen sulfide?
Yeah,
we
did.
Did anyone mention that David Zillman addressed the school?
No.
We were at an assembly, and this was, it was only around about the time of the year that we were starting to practice for the whole suspension night, where the hall would be packed with 400 kids. And David Zillman, who I think is currently head of the Flying Doctor or something, he's one of these students who was a sixth former and he looked like 50 years old. He just seemed so worldly. His hair was already turning grey. He already had his glasses that looked like a Coca-Cola bottle. But he persuaded Ben Munday. Ben Munday got on the stage and he said, nobody here can possibly question how much I care about the school. And he got off the stage and David Zillman got on the stage. And he says he knows that the guys who are exploding these smog and air gas bombs know that Idleton has been blamed for it. And if it happens again, he's going to dob them in straight to the headmaster. Because that was the headmaster trying to make it look like it was an act of, this was just linked to an act of terrorism within the school.
It's pretty extraordinary, yeah. Only David Zillman could have done that. Just one first, Carol, you want to say something?
Yes, it's not quite about the students sent here, but earlier this year Radio National played back the recordings of the Freedom Ride through New South Wales and Queensland. And, you know, I'd read it in the paper at the time, but never heard it recorded and heard the other side. And they had taped the crowds in the pubs and things and kicking them out of halls and things. And two of the comments that constantly came up, I mean, A, they were absolutely shocked that they were there defending Aborigines. The town people couldn't comprehend that. But the two things that shocked them, and they said this in town after town, was that the men had long hair and they couldn't tell if they were girls or not. and the red next to the same thing, and they had the boys and girls sleeping together on the bus this June. And, you know, it was a hotbed of sexual innuendo, and this bus was traffic. The whole issue of what they were there was often waylaid by the long end.
That program on the Freedom Ride was mine. I travelled on it with Charles. And for anyone who's interested in the history of that, there's a website, www.freedomride.net. That gives a little bit more of the background.
Was Rachel from Samoa, isn't she?
Yes, Rachel Perkins had a three, or might even four, which is going to, well, I think start in the early days.
We talked about that before, the talking about the first strategy.
Yep. What we'd like to do is have a break, it wasn't so long, and we'll serve afternoon tea. And there's some copies of the papers up there, as I said, and in a folder. And please circulate and meet other people, change any names if you want.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.